We're the Nata Grande Boys. I'm Rodney Wood.
And I'm Kyle Jackson. Welcome to the Nata Grande Outdoors Podcast, where we
hunt it forward.
There we go.
Yeah.
We're ready.
We're not ready.
Thanks for the heads up, Rodney.
Jeez. Not ready, but we are recording.
We are a go.
We are a go. Gear Junkie Jerry.
We got Gear Junkie Jerry on.
I guess you can call me that.
Yeah, we're gonna. It's an upgrade from Pocahontas.
I'm not sure there's a can in there.
Right. There's a We Will and Steve Ferguson. Right?
Did I say that? Sir.
All right. Awesome.
Which is interesting because I hadn't seen Steve since college. It's been 10 years?
Been a while.
Yeah,
no,
it's been 12. No, it's been longer.
13 years.
2006, bro.
Yeah.
13.
Time passes.
It's when I met the wife.
Yeah.
So. In your last semester.
Yep. So good to see him. Good to be sitting with Gear Junkie Jerry.
Yep.
And doing a podcast. It rained last night. We're up here in the mountains of near Ruidoso, and nice and fresh and clean and crisp. Spring morning.
Yep.
Day after the end of turkey season.
Right, right.
Spring
yeah.
turkey.
So y'all did some turkey hunting yesterday, yeah?
Yep. Yep.
Did he get?
He did. Yep. Called in a gobbler a few times.
And finally
got him handled. And
yeah, with the bow?
Yeah, with the bow.
Oh, you took it with the bow?
Yep.
Nice.
Very
yep.
nice.
So that was pretty good. And it's 8 3/4.
Very nice.
48 1/2 long from beak to tail.
1-inch hooks.
1-inch hooks, yeah.
Very nice.
I think it's a Rio. We're still trying to figure out how the difference between a Rio and a...
Tail feathers.
Tail feathers.
Is it tail feathers?
Yeah, look at your tail feathers. Look at the color on your tail feathers.
Okay.
Yeah. Look it up and look at tail feathers.
I'm trying to remember because
I'll get it backwards.
I know. I always do it backwards too. Yeah. So
Rio has the darker tail. The darker tail
yes.
feathers.
The Rio has yeah. the darker, it's like a cream or a tan colored tail yes. feathers. The Miriam's has the more white.
White on the tip.
I think. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
Pretty sure. I could have got that completely
If we're
backwards.
Wrong, some way I'll let us know.
But, all right.
No, they won't. They never tell that. We can be right.
We can be right, wrong. We can do whatever care. We want. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the cream or the darker color, the cream or the tan tail feathers is the Rio.
Yeah.
And the whiter tail feathers is the Miriam's. Because we have an area up there where they're kind of their ranges meet. And so everybody's always calling in and saying, well, what about this? What about that? And so that's the best way to tell.
Hmm.
Just off of looking at them. So
yeah.
What do you guys think you had?
I think it was a Rio.
Yeah.
We're thinking.
I think that's what we have down
his hooks his hooks curved.
So I've got some other theories on telling the Miriam's apart from a Rio Grande.
So. Let's hear it.
Yeah.
Just from experience of killing Rios, their spurs more of a red color and
okay.
they kind of have a little more of a hook shape to them. And the Miriam's are typically more of a black color and more triangular, but never come across any scientific evidence on that. You know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've read too on the different color of iridescence on the plumage.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think, and so
that's not always consistent either. So.
It's interesting reading about that stuff because, you know, you got to consider sources and things like that. But, you know, just straight for someone who's not real. Versed in telling those things apart. That's generally what they talk about is the tail feathers. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, where those subspecies overlap, it really gets tricky.
Really
gets
tricky. Yeah.
Get a Miriam putting it to a Rio Grande, and now you get red hooks and tail feathers. And...
Right.
Yeah, we got 10 or 15 miles from here, and there's Rio Grandes, you know, and of course we're surrounded by Miriams.
So. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And a couple places. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I think New Mexico's pretty sought after to come hunt turkeys because we've got
three subspecies
here in New Mexico that you can hunt, and so to complete that turkey slam, this is a pretty popular place. Yeah. And you can hit a Merriam's and a Rio Grande within
an hour's
drive, and so man, it makes it pretty popular, that's for sure.
Yeah, he got that one, and we were trying to get me one, but the shot presented itself to him, so
right.
he took it.
That's how it goes.
We found other birds, but they were hung up on private land around feeders, of course. And
right.
Yeah. Right. Trying to do it on public.
We think it's the same one that we called in. Called in twice.
Yeah, Jerry, I thought he was going to have him yesterday morning. He went to range him and just picked up on a little bit of movement. And
right.
Spun around.
Got nervous.
Head the other way.
Such eyesight on those birds. The eyesight on those birds is ridiculous. And any little movement, man, and they're just gone, Johnson.
Yeah. He shot him. He came in quiet behind us.
Oh, really?
And we were picking up to leave. And we thought we heard something behind us, so we just kind of moved around. And
there he was.
Boom. He saw me and clucked a little bit and went over a different way. And all of a sudden, pew, there it was.
Right, good deal. I want to take a turkey with my bow. I think that'd be pretty fun. I didn't get to this year. Got to take Maggie turkey hunting a little bit.
Yep.
But we planned our trip to Idaho, and it pretty much ate up all of the turkey season. Yeah. So there's a lot of weather yesterday that didn't affect you guys.
Oh, it rained on us. We were soaking wet.
It snowed a little bit yesterday.
We got out there late because of the rain. And lo and behold, they were still up in the roost, man. And the sun had been up for an hour and a half.
That's what he said. He said y'all had one jump out of the roost.
Yeah. We think it was that same one.
Before, but
we think it was that same one because it was the same area.
Yeah.
It was when we got them. And we came in. And we were underneath them. And they started clucking. And then
putting.
And then they jumped out and flew away. So we walked down and came back up the other side and came back down, and that's when we called him in the second time, because we called him in the night before too. And then that's when I couldn't get a shot when I went to range him. He took off, and then we came back and just relaxed for the afternoon. Went back out about 3:30, and couldn't get a gobble. Nothing.
Yeah.
And then we picked up to leave just before dark, and there he was.
Right. Yeah, good. Glad you got one.
How many days did you guys go out this year for the spring hunt?
He pulled a double this year.
Four. I went out four. I got a Merriam's the second weekend with the shotgun, and then I just tooled around with some Rio Grandes on the eastern side of the state. And, just called in a bunch of Jakes and big gobblers. Too close to a house. Feeders again.
Were you guys having problems with them coming to the call? Because that's what I've heard a lot up north, is that they would strut and they would talk, but they just weren't coming.
Yes and no. I mean, in the beginning of the morning, they'd gobble on the roost. As soon as they hit the ground, they'd gobble once and then shut up. And I'd watch them in full strut. And about 9:30, 10 o'clock, they'd break away from the hens, and then they'd come in full strut, and then they'd hang up, and I'd just back off on the calling, and they'd come on in, but they sucked their feathers in, just came to check it out.
Yeah.
Walked into the gun barrel, but it's a tricky game.
It is. It's a lot of fun, though. My daughter's, she's hooked on it. She was upset that she didn't get to go anymore. This season, but there's always next season. She's got a deer tag. So how'd you guys do on the draw?
I got a September deer.
September archery deer and Barbary here in this general area, that 4-unit hunt in February. So
nice. Now this is interesting, because since they split that, you're a fan of September deer.
Yeah.
Which is I'm not gonna say there's not a lot of people who are fans of September deer, but I think the majority of people would prefer the January hunt because
that's when the big ones come out.
Yeah, that's when the big ones come out. It's you're in the rut. Yeah. You got the hard horns then, and all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just like I want to get up in the high country and find that big guy in the middle of nowhere. Or the velvet. You know, I think it'd be nice to have a velvet. I mean, I got those two there, and they're both hard, but I think it'd be nice to have a velvet. So, you know, so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
So you're one of the odd ones, I guess. I'm not going to say that, because there's probably others out there like you, but...
Guaranteed to get drawn.
The nice thing about it is that you've probably got better odds of drawing that September hunt now that they've split it. And so, I mean, you're probably one of the smarter ones, because you're... putting in for a hunt that's probably got better draw odds for
I put in two September hunts first and then January 3rd.
Yeah.
So
that's where he loses it right there. That's where he loses me. to each his own. That's what we preach all the time. But whatever you can do to increase your odds, you know, and I would do it different.
Right.
But I would still put in for the September hunt. It would just, you know, be a second or third choice.
Right.
I don't know that 2B or 2C will never not be my first choice.
Right.
Is September your first choice?
I think it was my third choice. I put in January as well, and then I think my second choice was a muzzleloader hunt or something. I don't know. I put in for everything in the book, so I don't remember everything.
Right.
But I'm glad to get something. I was glad to get that refund back, too.
Yeah, that's the truth. That came in pretty handy for us. It came in just at the tail end of our
Idaho trip.
And we're like, oh, we got gas money. We're good to go.
We were probably starting to look a little thin in the billfold department until that refund hit. Like you said, right at the end. And
yeah, you forget about it until it hits, huh?
Like, no, I was looking for it.
Hoping.
Oh, I'd like to go out for a steak dinner tomorrow night.
And you get all those memes on Facebook, sitting here waiting on my refund.
All they do is change the words, sitting here waiting on the draw results.
Yeah.
Sitting here waiting on my refund.
Yeah.
Sitting here waiting on hunt start.
Right.
Same meme, different words.
That's the truth. Now did either of you buy into all the talk about the back door this year?
I saw it, but I didn't buy in.
Cause there was a lot of talk about it, you know, every year there seems to be talk right around, you know, around the middle of April. Oh, there's a back door. And, I think we've told this story before, but I had a mechanic buddy who, that happened a couple of years ago. And I told him, he said, hey, man, I drew a bighorn sheep tag. I was like, I wouldn't bank on that. I'm telling you now, they do a mock draw before they do the actual draw. And sure enough, a couple of days that disappeared, and he didn't actually draw a bighorn sheep tag. And he was devastated.
There was one theory that came up that came pretty close to what we thought. But I don't think it worked out for everybody. So, and plus it kind of flipped around quite a bit. So I kind of put it to bed, but
they were talking about the mailing.
A different theory. Yeah. So here's one thing, a public service announcement to all you people that find the back door, keep that shit to yourself. Because what you do is you go blasting it on Facebook, Department of Game and Fish is watching, they see it and they're like, closed.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
that's one of the reasons they do a mock draw is so they can close those back doors.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. But
the main deal is they're making sure that the system works.
And I know they do the mock draw, but they're typically, you know, there's back doors. You know, we find them every now and again, but that's the problem is they get shared and then gets all over Facebook, and then the department finds it and shuts the back door. So tell your buddies by all means, but call them. Don't put that stuff on Facebook.
So, I'm pretty excited. I'm thinking maybe December might go do deer in Arizona. So we'll see.
That's right. You're from Arizona.
Yep.
So we'll segue from that. So one of the things that we've been talking about here lately is, especially right after the draw, to everybody that didn't draw a tag, starts screaming for a point system. Now, I know that you are, I don't know if you're in favor of a point system or against a point system, but you do have an opinion on how the point system works in Arizona. Talk about that in Arizona and
yeah, I mean the point system, it seems pretty good for Arizona. Like, I mean, I only hunted from, I'm relatively a rookie hunter. Hunted for 2 years in Arizona before I moved to New Mexico. And then I was only putting in for 2 years, and I drew an elk tag the year I moved out here.
Yeah.
And me, my buddy, and another buddy of mine, and one of my buddies, he's been hunting since he was a kid with his dad, and then our other buddy, it was his first year putting in. So we kind of, I don't know, we all kind of, we put in together and all three of us got drawn. So it's kind of like, well, did the point system work for person, or did it work for the other person?
Yeah, you know, so is it a shared point system? I mean, can you, because I know like in Utah, you can buddy up with your points. So two people don't have, and this is interesting because we've talked about this a lot, but right. I never knew that.
Right.
Because I know in Utah, two people that don't have any points can put in with somebody that has a lot of points, and they're all going to get drawn.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. See, I don't know how that all worked. If it was me that got drawn, and then they both got drawn, or if my buddy that's been hunting his whole life had so many points. But I mean, last year I drew an elk tag in Arizona. So I've been out here for six years now. So it's been rough, and that was 2018, so it was 5 years then. So roughly 5 years, he drew an elk tag.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, you know, yeah. I don't know how that, I mean, because when you draw, I'm guessing it scrubs your points, so,
yeah,
you know. So
yeah, it scrubs your points, and then, you know, the question I've had a lot about it is, you know, what kind of a unit, you know, is it a prime unit, or is it, you know, a scrub unit, you know?
Right.
Well, you know, like, I know everybody talks about the strip down there in Arizona, and my guess is that's probably one of those that you're not going to draw unless you've got 30 years worth of points.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
So,
you know, and then they say, you know, he actually drew the same unit that we drew before. Mm-hmm. And that was actually just when we put in for that one, that was kind of just off the hand. We just put in for it and we drew it. And he put it on his application last year and ended up drawing it again. So,
yeah,
you know, so one I don't know. I mean, I don't think it was a high demand, but there's some high demands around it.
Yeah.
So, but.
And one other thing too, keep in mind is Arizona does have some over-the-counter options to offset.
Yeah, for deer.
You know, yeah. Offset yeah. that.
Well, and Utah did too. I mean, that was one of the things that I think some of the proponents of point systems talk about is, yeah, for these high demand hunts, you've got the preference points, but then they've also got really low demand areas that are just kind of over the counter. You can buy a tag and eat every year, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, exactly. So that's why we don't have that. We don't have any over the counter public land tags as far as the big game species, other than our exotics. So Barbary and Oryx.
Yeah.
And so that is something to take into account. While we, being proponents of the flat draw system where you have a chance every single year.
Right.
You know, we don't, unless you have no landowner or unless you're wanting to go hunt statewide Oryx or statewide Barbary, you don't have the option of an over-the-counter tag.
But
we do have,
you can't hunt statewide Oryx on an over-the-counter tag. That is only private land.
So, I mean,
you can hunt statewide Barbary and you can hunt statewide Ibex.
And, Javelina. If there's
it's not over the counter.
Anyways,
they just have tags left.
Yeah. The purpose of that conversation being that they do have those opportunities for the big game species just as an over the counter tag. Mind you, the odds of actually getting one probably going to be
fairly low because it's a high opportunity hunt, not a high demand type hunt.
Yeah, it's kind of like even Montana has that over-the-counter bighorn sheep tag.
Yeah.
That's really cool. You buy an over-the-counter bighorn sheep tag every year. When you harvest one, you cannot hunt it again for 7 years. You know, but that's still opportunity, you know, and that's what scares me about New Mexico if it was ever to go to a point system, is that there's no opportunity outside of the draw. So that's what really scares me about New Mexico even considering that, which from what I understand, there's been no talk of it. There's just talk of people wanting to go to it because they can't draw tag.
Right.
You know.
What are your thoughts, Stephen?
I think it just depends on how picky you're being really on, you know, I mean, you can look at the draw odds, and if you want to go hunt bull elk, put in for something that's got better draw odds, you know. Exactly. I mean,
yeah, that's what we've been trying to preach is get out of your comfort zone. Right. You know, you talk to guys who say, "I hadn't drawn elk in 13 years." Yeah, you've been putting in for the Vividol for 13 years.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's the only thing you put in for. Yeah. Do a second, do a third, heck, do a fourth if you just really want to go hunting.
Exactly. It's all about hunting.
Well, I had another buddy this year, actually. He hasn't hunted, I think since he was in his early 20s, maybe even teens, with his parent, with his uncles and all that. And it's his first time putting in this year. And he only put in one choice, and he just happened to get it.
Yeah.
And you know, I was like, wow. I was like, you didn't, and I'm like, you didn't do the rest? It's like, no, I only know that one unit, so I just put in for, like,
just put in one choice.
I was like, holy cow, dude. And then he texted me. He said, yep, I got it. And I'm like, whoa, okay.
Right. There are those lucky ones.
That's how we structure ours, you know. Yeah. We put a very, you know, like a 2B up first choice, and then we, you know, something kind of middle of the road, second choice type deal, and then third choice, we just want to go hunting.
Yeah.
You know, and then, and this year we drew a first choice, a second choice, and a third choice.
Yeah.
You know, you so we got all of them, you know, for elk second choice, antelope first choice, deer third choice.
Yep. Yeah.
In my opinion, it doesn't really matter what unit you're in. If you do your homework, the animals are there.
Yes.
You know, the only thing you can't control is the weather. You know, that's what's going to screw it up. I mean, and as far as, like, you know, the point system and all that, I kind of think we should just leave it where it's at personally.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I know somebody, the guy that I learned how to hunt from, you know, he's one of those that complains, oh, I haven't drawn a bull elk tag in, you know, since the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And he finally drew one this year. Well, where's he putting in? He's putting in the helix. He wants a giant bull.
For rifle, well, right?
Muzzle loader.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
still very popular.
Yeah, in the last 4 years, I've drawn a bull tag twice.
Right?
Yeah. For muzzle loader.
See, that's us. We've drawn three in the past 4 years.
Yep.
Yeah, so.
And this year we have a good one.
Yeah.
Last year's was pretty miserable.
I'm not going to say it was miserable. The animals were there. We saw elk.
Yeah, we saw elk.
It's a tougher hunt.
Still, that's a tough,
and it's an opportunity.
It's
hunt.
An opportunity.
But
hunt.
It's just what Stephen was saying was the reason we put in for it is because it was high drawing odds, and because
you knocked up your woman.
Yeah,
that's the reason we put it.
Well, it was a lot of fun doing. Let me tell you that.
I bet it was
a lot of fun screwing it up.
On two levels.
Sorry, Annie. Didn't mean to bring it up.
But the other thing about it was that I knew that unit. I had hunted that unit before. I knew where they likely were going to be. And actually, that's more elk. What we saw was actually more elk than I saw in that unit. When I've hunted it previously.
Yeah.
So, like Stephen was saying, do your homework, do a little bit of scouting. The animals are there.
Not
Facebook scouting. The animals are there.
Google counts, though.
Google does count.
Google does.
They may not be 400-class bulls. They may not be in the numbers that you're going to find them in. Let's say you're hunting deer. You may not have the hundreds of deer that we saw in 2B, but they're there. And if you're willing to do the work...
Yeah.
Jimmy Christmas, I have never seen the deer. So many deer up there.
Well,
does. Lots of bucks, too.
Lots of bucks. Man,
thousands of does.
Yeah. It's like whitetail in Idaho.
Right? Yeah, we saw thousands and thousands of whitetail in Idaho. Of course, this time of year, everything sheds, so. And they're all, you know, about the size of your puppy. They're just tiny.
Right.
So tiny. I was actually pretty amazed.
There's a reason, there's a reason to let them shoot like five of them back east, because that's what it takes to put together a steak.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I remember you telling me they were small.
They were tiny. Yeah, I was pretty shocked. You were. Our whitetail deer.
Were they about as big as a coos deer or smaller?
About as big as a coos deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty small.
Pretty small. But
not as big as the whitetail we have up here.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I know that there's places where the whitetail grow big, you know, Kansas, Canada.
Yeah.
But up there, they're not large creatures. I'm sure that there's some areas where they are bigger, but right there where we were at. And it's interesting because some locals there were telling us that they had just went through, and this is the second one. The locals there were telling us that they had just had a bad bout of blue tongue.
Yeah.
And it knocked out about 20,000 or so.
They said, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah.
I said they were fit deer standing dead. They'd like lean up against the fence and die. They'd just be standing there dead. They said there were so many of them that they were digging pits, dumping them into pits. Freaking... And they said it stunk so bad just because so many deer died.
Imagine when they go to dig that up in 1,000 years.
Right. Right.
These guys were animals. Right. They would just kill all these
people. Might start thinking about that with all these archaeological sites.
Yeah.
Thinking that's where they were killing them. Maybe
there was a huge civilization here.
Right.
And then we had some more people from Omaha telling us that they had a bad case of blue tongue up there not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Wiped out a whole bunch of
deer. What does that blue tongue do?
I mean he just told us about that.
I know.
But is it a virus or was it
I don't know, let me look it up.
Go back to our podcast with Carrie Maurer. And he talked about it a little bit.
Okay.
We had an elk die off not too long ago, up north, near Reto.
Got into that water
and,
or whatever?
Yeah, and they thought that might be blue tongue, but it turned out to be a bacteria in the water that got them. So that's in that podcast, our podcast with Carrie Maurer. I don't know what episode it is. We'll look it up later and put it in the show notes so you can go listen to that.
15, but I think.
15, season 2, episode 15?
Yep.
So... And, but yeah, so wiped out a lot of them. You would think that would make them a little bit bigger if there were fewer, but I guess genetics are just set in there. So.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing you get is just the anecdotal, you know, what people see type of thing. They were saying up there in Idaho that, oh, we're not seeing near the bucks, but with that many does, you're going to have bucks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just... Are you seeing them, or where are they hanging out? That type of thing. So,
yeah,
that's always interesting to talk about.
So. What else you got on our list?
We wanted to. So, we call him Gear Junkie Jerry because he's one of those guys. I got a friend in Utah. His name's Aaron Orgel, and Rodney's laughing because he knows who he is. The first time Rodney met Aaron, his impression was not, I guess you were not impressed.
Well,
I'm just kidding. Okay.
Let me defend myself.
All right.
No, it wasn't that I was not impressed. Aaron's a good guy. I like the hell out of Aaron. He was not the type of person
you expected me to be hanging out with.
I expected you to be hanging out
with. And that's the funny thing about my friend Aaron in Utah is I met him when I was in college, and he was basically the Kramer of our dorms. I would come home and he'd be in my dorm room.
Kramer is a good
hanging out on my couch. I'm like, how the hell did you get in my dorm room? Don't worry about it, you know. So he was basically the Kramer of our dorms, and he's kind of between
you know, as you go through life, you kind of cycle through groups of friends, you know, your college friends, and then this and that and the other. And he was kind of the center point among all those different groups of friends because he just inserted himself. And the thing I really like about Aaron is he's the honey badger. He really don't give a shit. You know, he'll insert himself into like any situation. And he's just a cool guy, does not have any self-awareness about who he should be talking to or any of that. And so he's a pretty cool guy like that. But the point I was getting to with Aaron was went off on a little tangent there. He's very
studious.
Into sports, and he can give stats, and he you know, tell you this guy played at this college, and these are his stats from last year, and so he's that type of guy. Well, Jerry's kind of that way with some of the gear, the hunting gear and stuff like that, and so that's why we bring him in as Gear Junkie Jerry, because we're not like that.
No, I'm not, and you pointed out you're a little surprised that I'm not like that, because I'm pretty detail-oriented with the planning of our hunts and all of that, but the really only thing that I care about my gear is, does it work? You know, and I go to Jerry and I'll ask him, because he's like, yeah, it's got this much Teflon and that much nylon and this much wool and it's 200D and I don't know what any of that shit is. I just said my question is, does it work?
I mean, I don't think I'm that into it, but I just kind of.
Even Steve's over here going, nope, here he is.
He's got that outfit shop for a backpack and sleeping bag.
He's, like, he's doing those things. I could stop if I wanted to.
Right.
All this technology that he's talking about, like you're saying, man.
I know.
I just get bored, I guess, what it is. So I just start looking at stuff.
Right.
You know, and I guess that's just the key to understanding and reading reviews and watching videos on the reviews.
Yeah,
and
you
stuff
know,
like
so
that.
You watch a lot of videos. I don't watch too many videos. I do read the reviews because, like I said, the only thing I care about is does it work.
Right.
You know, and I typically like to read the bad reviews. Mm-hmm. I don't need to read the good reviews.
Right. You want to know when it's going to fail.
I want to know what type of failure it has.
Yeah.
Because it may fail in a way that I don't care about.
Right.
You know, so like I might be reading reviews on a backpack and find out that all the bad reviews say the same thing, that this backpack leaks. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care, because I'm going to put a cover on it.
Right.
So that review, so that's what I like to do. Yep. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what I advise people just to do. Just there's so much with the internet, there's so much information out there now. You know, and there's, I mean, even when, like we were talking about going scouting, you know, there's so much information with Google Earth and all that. I mean, you can know what a country looks like before you even get there, you know, exactly where you need to go. So, I mean, there's, with everything, I mean, I just try and do as much as I can, and unfortunately, most of the time, it's out of stock when I want to go get it. So
by the time you finally decide which one you want,
I mean, just like that dang sleeping bag that I wanted, that Nemo Argali, that thing was amazing, so I got a good reviews on it, and I happened to see it on sale at one time, and I was like, oh man, that's a good deal. And then I didn't get it, and then the reason why it went on sale is because they stopped making it.
Has like been the case for more stuff that we've got that we really liked than anything else. You're like, you get something, you're like, oh, this is so awesome, and then you think, I ought to get another one just in case. And you're like, nah, this is so good. They're never going to stop making this. And then a year, the next year when you or 2 years later when you need something or you need a part or you need something like that, you go to look it up. Yep, not making it anymore. What the? Why? Come on.
Perfect example. I have a Primos Pack Bugle. It's about 16 inches long. It's a 1-inch diameter. I like the smaller, you know, the smaller bugle. I have some bigger bugles, but they're like, you know, carrying a freaking piece of PVC through the woods. Right. It's very small, compact, and it works fantastic. I've had great luck with it. And they quit making it, quit selling it. And I was just like pissed. But
they still make the blue reeds for it because it's mm-hmm. one of those that got the little. So I ordered like 50 of the little blue reeds.
Right. Just got a whole. Just got them in cold storage.
Yeah, yeah. I got a whole
it's like temperature sensitive.
Yeah. Because if I ever lose that bugle, I'm gonna cry. Because I absolutely love it. And I can't find them on eBay.
Right.
You know, not even any used ones anywhere.
Yep.
But I love that bugle, but they don't make it anymore.
Yep. Yeah, you know, it's just when you find something you like, it's better to buy two.
Right? Especially in that regard.
Yeah.
And it might work so well because everybody else is packing all the other bugles, and I'm the only one that's got that one.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Listen, that guy, he's out of date. That was sold last 2015.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah.
More like 26.
Yeah.
So, well, cool. So what's, I guess, what's hot this year? What's really on the radar? What's coming up? And
well, there's been a lot of talking on a bunch of random stuff coming up. I mean, you don't really, there's a lot of stuff that people are talking about last year. You know, last year's good gear. A lot of people are still developing. Most stuff doesn't come out until summer. You know, that's when they start releasing stuff. There's a lot of new, you know, you guys just went and met with Kafaru. You know, those guys are putting packs out like every 3 weeks, something new coming from them, you know, and that's kind of cool. I've seen on some, like with, like if we start talking about packs, you know, a lot of people, some companies make 1000D denier packs, you know, and then people started moving to 500. Well, like now people are starting to move to 350, you know, getting it down to that, and they're finding a good way to make them lighter.
What the hell's that mean?
You know, the denier, it's just the
1000D. That means you see it in, you know,
it's like the 1000Ds. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not super hip to what it, exactly the whole thing about it is, but it's just the quality, the durability of it. Mm-hmm.
Is it thinner, lighter, like 300s?
Yeah. Yeah, thinner. It's thinner, lighter, makes it lighter.
Still is durable.
Right, exactly. That's what some guys are going to. They're making that 350. But, I mean, there's still people that are making the 500, you know, because that's what they want their product to be, is the 500, you know. So, when I got my pack, my pack's 1,000. And the company that I go with, they just went to 500 now. You know?
So lower for denier, the lower mm-hmm. number is the lighter
the
weight,
lighter,
more durable.
I don't want to say.
Is it like golf? You want the lower score?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, it's not. I don't know if it's more durable, but I think they're finding it just as or close to as durable as the 500 or the 1000. You know,
so, it's lighter.
But yeah, I mean, that's what everyone's trying to go lighter and lighter. You know, especially with backpacks. Backpack hunting is coming.
Yeah.
Pretty strong right now.
So that's one thing that we talked about too on backpacks. Kafaru come out with that the waterproof one. I don't know what the hell you call it, but
mm-hmm.
and you know, you had mentioned but you can just put a pack over it. It's one more piece of gear you got to carry.
Right.
Track it.
Well, not necessarily even. Well, even they came out with the waterproof one, but mm-hmm. I mean, how much stuff in your pack you really want to keep dry, you know, your sleeping bag,
sleeping
of course,
bag,
but you can buy a stuff sack for that, you know, and you can compress that down, you know, those things that you can throw into there and you can compress them down and put them in there. And those things are protected now.
Yeah.
You know,
this is what I find interesting about gear. He said, well, you don't need that. You just buy a stuff sack, put it in there. And I'm thinking, but if I buy a stuff sack, put it in there, and then put it in that bag, ain't nothing getting wet.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, preference.
Well, and that might be, something cool to consider based on what kind of hunting you're doing. You know, up there in Idaho, we saw rivers, actual rivers,
right?
You know,
right.
Where
drop your
they,
river and
they
done.
Do they do that? They'll drop a raft in at salmon in the Salmon River, float. And hunt all the way through that river of no return, Frank Church Wilderness, and come out the other end, get picked up on the other end. And so, if you're doing that, that's possibly something that you might want to consider, because then ain't nothing getting wet.
There you go.
Right. Yeah. And you know, that's, you know, it's people. They look at that waterproof bag, and it weighs this much. Well, my pack right now weighs this much, and if I add this, it only adds this many ounces to it instead of how many ounces that's, you know, going to run me. Yeah. So, you know, it's just all what you feel that you want to do, you know, how much you want to carry, you know.
So what do you think are the most popular packs right now and kind of the most, or I should say, what are the most popular packs outside of, you know, just the ones that everybody's carrying? And then what do you think are the best packs being made?
I think the three major right now are Kefaru, Mystery Ranch, and Exo Mountain. And Stone Glacier's moved into it too. They moved in.
Yeah, they're making a pretty big push.
Yeah, they're making pretty good. And you know, and then you got your lower tier from there. You got your Everly Stock and your Badlands and Tenzing and all that stuff like that. My pack is just a small company. They're out of Idaho, and they're called Black's Creek. And it's been a pretty good pack so far. I've been running it 2 years now, and it's been pretty good. So, it's the 1000D. You know, it's not the lightest, but you know, it does what I want it to do. You know, I've acquired a few more things for gear, so I think I might need to up it. Right, it's a 3000, so I think I might need to get a little bit bigger. Once I do, you know, pretty big backpack one, but yeah, or backpack hunt, but for the most part, I haven't had any problems with it, you know. Yeah. But you know, there's going to be problems with everyone's, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess the only thing that I've had an issue is that there's a squeak in it that I'm trying to find right now. Yeah. It's just kind of it's like a reet. You know, it's kind of, and it's only every once in a while, but I hear it.
Third or fifth step. Reet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right when you step out to take that shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so it's just, you know, there's just little things, and you guys got to find them and fix them, you know. So, but it's fell off the side of a cliff. It's been pretty tough, you know. So
it fell off the side of the cliff with you, right?
No.
Different.
That was a different time. No, I didn't have it on that. No, that was just me, and I just had a little day pack on that day. But yeah, that was fun.
Right on. So you were telling me something about some binoculars the other day. What's new in the binocular world? I know for the past 5 or so years, it's all been Vortex, 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 and I got Vortex. You got Vortex. They're great class.
Yeah. Yeah. There's you can go into glass all day long. You know, you got
new something. New.
But the new ones. Maven, they came out, I think it was about 2 years ago, that these people started making a push on those.
I've heard that name.
And I found them on some of my, I'm a veteran, I found them on some of my veteran sites, they're starting to push them on there. They don't make the lower line like the Diamondbacks or the Crossfires compared to Vortex, but, or like the B2s for Leupold, but they're in that $400 to $500 range.
Still affordable for the common guy.
Yeah, you know, I watched some videos on some guys that I follow of them actually comparing them. I watched one guy, he compared them to Swirlos. And he had them in two different powers, so he had he put the Swirlos closer because they were a lower power. But he said that their clarity was pretty much match to match. Except when you get to the edges, you know, I guess I'm not totally hip to the glass on how to judge it, but he was saying I'm pretty confident on what he talks about, and he just said the edge to edge quality is better, of course, on the Swirlos, but he said but for the most part they're pretty spot on.
So I was one of those guys, and this is interesting, I guess, evolution in the way, in my thought process, in the way that I looked at gear and that type of thing, because I was one of those guys who thought, oh, I can make anything work, you know. It's why would you buy a $2,000 pair of glass or, you know, whatever? And I had the opportunity to, we were doing an elk calf capture study up on the Vivadol when I was younger in my career. And I just had old Burris or Bushnell or whatever, you know, type of glass. and some of the biologists had a Zeiss and a Swarovski, and so we're sitting there looking, and you know, I'm looking at watching this calf, because we would watch them bed down, and then we would go capture them and put a radio call or radio tag in their ear so they could track mortality. So I'm watching this calf, and then you know, at some point the biologist goes, "Hey, you want to take a look through these?" And I looked at this, you know, looked through the Swarovski, and I'm like, "Holy jeez almighty!" Right? The difference was just that stark, and that's where I think that's where really my mind and my thought process started to change into, okay, there is something to quality, there's something to, you know, you get what you pay for. I think there's limits on it. I think at you know, for the common guy, probably not going to be able to afford a Swarovski, or your money is probably better spent spread it out across good gear.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
When you can get a pair of, you know, pair of Vortex or Mavens or whatever it is that is of similar quality, maybe not that high, but it's dang sure good quality glass, and then you can spread whatever else you would have spent on that Swarovski on a good pack or a good pair of boots or something like that. And I think
rifle.
Or a good rifle.
You can't just have good glass. You have to have.
And so, that, I mean, that's, I'm still there where, you know, we talk about if you're trying to get into hunting, it's a beg, steal, or borrow.
Right.
If it's the choice between having, being able to afford getting good gear and being able to afford going hunting, I'm using Walmart gear and I'm going hunting.
Right.
But as you grow and as you develop and budget and put some stuff towards good gear, make sure that you're getting good quality gear, because it's going to last you longer. It's going to, you know, it's going to help you out. You're not going to have freaking tired eyes looking through bushnells and all that stuff.
And that's kind of, you know, what my whole thing is I don't, I had a spotting scope. I ended up selling it because I just found I didn't use it as much. You know, everyone, you know, you got to have spotter and you got to have this. And I'm like, okay, well, I can look at that spotter, right? So I can look at something 3 miles away. But am I really going to go that distance, you know? I mean, if it's, usually when you're hunting, you're looking at that canyon. And if you don't see anything, you're going to go to the next canyon. And you're gonna, and you want something that you're going to get onto, you know? So that's my theory behind it is yeah, there's something 3 miles away over there. But am I going to get there today? No. Yeah. You know? So, I mean, yeah, I might miss them that, you know, that far away, but
I think for your everyday, I think for your
scouting, I could see it being a good deal because you know you're scouting, and yeah, you're going to scout some deer up long distances. You know, especially out here where you can glass up towards that high country, you can get down low and glass up to the high country.
Right.
But it's like you're saying, what you were saying earlier, it's all dependent on what you're doing and the hunt that you're on. You know, and. Unfortunately, I think that's what we do to ourselves a lot is we like to
beat our chest on what we have.
Well, you know, we like to go on lots of different hunts, you know, like, you know, and unfortunately not just one piece of gear will always work on every hunt.
Right.
So you got to kind of mix and match your stuff. And sometimes you spend too much. Yeah. Throw it at him. I don't care. Get in with this camera. You can, you know, you need a good set of 12x50s for one hunt, but then a 8x42s for another hunt. You know, and there's a lot of people out there. Bring that pin back, Jackson. there's a lot of people out there that want just that one do it all, and they don't make it.
Right.
You know, there's not.
Just well, a, and see, and that's I think that's what I'm gonna move to just carrying 12s.
Yeah.
You know. Some, I mean, I have a pair of eights that I can, you know, if I'm in, you know, thick timber, I'll have my eights so I can look at stuff. But, you know, with a, if I'm up on a ridge or something, I can see, you know, across that canyon or whatever. You know, I'm not, I mean, I guess you want the quality glass if you're looking to, you know, count cheaters on an animal. But I mean, if I see something over there that's legal, and I'm gonna go look, take a look at it, get closer,
and
take
and
a look.
That's another perfect example right there that you bring up about your gear. When you, if you're trophy hunting, you're not gonna want to waste that time going after every animal when you're just gonna get up there and decide, yeah, that's not big enough. You're gonna want to know am I going after him?
Right.
So you're going to need that good glass. You're going to need that quality glass so you can, like you said, right, count the cheaters.
Right.
For somebody that's just going to be like, yep, he's good enough for me.
Right.
You may not need that.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So,
and like Jerry was talking about, we tend to, as humans, we tend to want to beat our chest and say, look at all this cool stuff we have, you know, big truck and jacked up and, you know, I got Swarovskis and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But really, what do you need?
But they're only putting one deer down every 5 years,
yeah,
you know?
Right. Yeah. Like, really, what do you need? What is the hunt that you're going on gonna require? And if you don't need it, don't take it. Yeah. You know, if you're going on a bighorn sheep hunt, I'm probably taking a spot scope because you're going to be able to get up high and that's where you're going to see something 3 miles off and you're like, yep, we're going to it.
And even in some places you have to know that age on them.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Exactly. So, that's a really good point that I think you make is understanding what you're hunting, where you're hunting and what gear you actually need versus what do you want to take.
Right.
I'm a guy who tends to over prepare. And after about the first day of carrying my pack, there's a bunch of stuff that usually comes out of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm probably not alone in that, but there's a lot of stuff that comes out of it.
Yeah, there's guys that make that carry a, you know, little pocketbook with them, and you know, each day they, oh, yep, I use this, yep, I use that. And then when they get home, they look at it and they're like, I can take this out, I can take that out. You know, I didn't use this, I used this one time at this one point,
yeah,
you know.
And then you're out there in the middle of the woods, and you're like,
where's it go? Where'd it go?
Yeah, I took it out.
Yeah.
It's always that one time that you see it.
I should have brought the toilet paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of stuff out there, you know, and I'm no expert by the means, but I just do my research and just trying to figure out the best I have.
That's why we wanted to talk to you. You're not an expert. This is not an expert podcast.
Right. But you got an expert podcast machine.
We do.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I was super happy when we walked into Kafaru, into the Kafaru Cast studio and saw his recorder is the same recorder.
Yeah.
That's all
now,
that we
now
have
take
to say
now.
Because he has
so,
a studio.
So, remember though, we're talking about we're not experts. That doesn't mean we shouldn't spend some money on some good gear.
Yeah.
And it's something that's going to last us a while. So that's what we did.
Yeah.
But,
We got tired of deleting our podcasts off our phones, what we did.
I think as far as selection of hunting gear or camping gear, you know, fishing gear, a lot of it just depends on the access. You know, I mean, are you packing in? Are you going to be up in the Pecos High Country Wilderness, you know, for 3 nights? I mean, that's where the expensive gear and it's lightweight, that's going to hold up to the heavy rains, you know, that good glass,
yeah,
you know, if you're after a sheep, you know. But I mean, I'm pretty successful with hunting on stuff that I bought 15, 20 years ago at Walmart.
Yeah.
I'm still using it.
Well,
yeah.
So it's like you guys were saying in the Kafaru Cast, you guys hunt from a base camp. You have your wall tent and all that, and then you guys head out from there, you know, and that's...
Well, and that's our, yeah, exactly, and that's our standard MO, you know. But, you know, like I know that me and Kyle have been talking about, specifically me, I want to go do a wilderness turkey hunt to where we strike out on foot for 5 or 10 days.
Just spike camping.
Just spike camping as we go
hunting
for turkey. Now, I want to do it for turkey because...
Then we have to carry out an elk.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we need to get our feet wet first, you know, because
we're
talking about doing it on foot, not on horse. And, you know, so I want to get my feet wet first, and I don't want to get my feet wet with an elk.
Right.
That would be a little much. And even a deer.
Yeah.
You know, and doing a wilderness turkey hunt like that, you know, that's a totally different ballgame with gear. I mean, you don't have to have that heavy glass. And, you know, I mean...
Yeah.
You don't have to have a lot of storage.
Yeah, you've done that a couple times, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, I packed into the Gila 5.5 hours, you know, for turkey. And, you know, the main things that you need to worry about is having a light sleeping bag and then having light food and light fuel for, you know, cooking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's where the weight added up and that's where it wears out your body. big time.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I mean, we do typically set a big cap. You know, like this year our elk tag, there's some wilderness area up there.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't bet against us not going in there.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, of course, you know, that's us. We want to hunt in every damn unit, and we want to hunt every way we can. You
right.
know, we just got to start somewhere.
Right.
And you know, with our deer hunt this year, we won't even be camping. We'll be staying with family.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly.
We got some great family that's just, you know, they're a joy to be around, and we really enjoy their company and hanging out with them during the hunt and stuff. And so we won't even camp on that deer hunt, which is definitely not our MO.
Right.
You know, anywhere else we're camping
right.
In some way, shape, or form.
Right.
But because we're doing that, we can change up what we're using. You know,
exactly.
And on that hunt, we're going to have spot and scope because the way we hunt that, you sit up on the cap, you glass those dunes, you find your buck, you put them to bed, and then you go for it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's exactly what we've been talking about here is you just got to gauge that.
Yeah.
You don't have to buy all the gear in the world, but you should know what your hunt is
mm-hmm.
and prepare for that.
Right.
And if you get good gear, it's going to last you. And so let's say next year we don't draw that hunt. We're not going to have to worry about that. But here in a couple of years, we might draw that hunt again. So, we're going to put that stuff in a
right.
box,
yeah.
take care of it.
Yeah. Yeah, we have different camo for that hunt.
Absolutely.
Just because it's different terrain and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. But, you know, so I operate kind of on a rule of thumb.
Maybe you should have been rulerist.
Rulerist. so it's kind of it's like at home, anytime I'm doing a project, you know, anytime I'm building something, you know, building beds for the kids or building a dresser, or, you know, I buy a tool.
Right.
Sometimes it's a $10 wrench. Sometimes it's a $200 saw.
Right.
You know, but for each project, I buy a tool.
Right.
And so I do the same thing when for hunts. For each hunt, I buy something that I don't have that could possibly be necessary for that hunt, that specific hunt. And then throughout the years, you start accumulating good gear.
Right.
You know, and then, of course, you know, you have to do the whole take care of it, you know,
mm-hmm.
put it up. You know, like my hunting boots are for hunting. I don't pull them out and work it.
Much to the wife's chagrin, you start accumulating stuff, and I went from being able to fit all my hunting stuff in a backpack to now I've got like two tubs worth of stuff, and she's like, "You really need all this stuff?" I'm like, "Do you really need all your leather working stuff?"
Yes.
Because
mm-hmm.
just saying.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to build myself a whole room pretty quick because we've been doing a lot of hunting and a lot of fishing here over the past few years, and the gear is piling up.
No.
And you're right, the wife is tired looking at it.
Yeah, that's when man caves come into play. Keep it all in there. It's out of sight, out of mind. They can't yell at you about it.
Yeah. I'm going to buy me a Connex.
Yep. Put your reloading bench in there.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
That's a whole nother... We shouldn't even get into that.
Right.
Whole other podcast.
I've also wanted to buy a Connex for I'm gonna have to buy two Connexes because I want one for meat processing
mm-hmm.
room.
Mm-hmm.
Put a cooler on it.
Mm-hmm.
Insulate it.
Put a cooler in it. Make it a cold room. A place where I can hang my meat,
mm-hmm.
and a place where I can process everything. Because right now, you know, I'm taking it somewhere because I don't have the space
mm-hmm.
to process my own animals. I used to process my own animals. Now, here recently, I've been taking them somewhere, and I've had decent luck. But I enjoy processing it. I enjoy making my own jerky and my own sausage and my own, you know, all that stuff. I enjoy doing that. I just don't have the means right now, so I've been taking it somewhere. But I should probably do that before I get me a gear room.
Yeah.
Well, and it all depends on where you're at, what your circumstances are in life. You know, I still rent. I don't own what I got, so
mm-hmm.
it's really hard for me to. I can't build a room.
Right.
I can't build a man cave.
Connex.
I understand that. They cost money.
I know.
So
budget.
Yeah. Yeah. But. So it just depends on where you're at, what you can do, and you just do what you can. And then, like I said, if it's a choice between not going hunting and hunting with crappy gear, I'm probably going hunting. So
absolutely, you know, we
tax returns are
Are good,
are a great thing. You know?
You know, they say you're not supposed to do that. You're giving money away, but they are nice when you get them back.
That's kind of what I do. I just buy a little bit every year. You know.
Yeah, it's the only way you can do it. It's just little pieces at a time, you know. You know, pray that it's still there when you get the money together and still on sale. Still make it.
That's the hardest part is like you're talking about. You find a good deal, like, you know it's a good deal, and you're like,
those websites
are killer. No way I can buy that right now.
Those websites are killer because they're like, boom, and you're like, I can't do it right now.
I solved that. So I created myself a hunting stash to where... don't listen to this podcast, honey. I've got about $300 to $400 right now stashed, and that's what it's for. It's for that, you know, when I see that something on sale that I've been wanting or something like that, because that happens too often.
Right.
So it's fixing to disappear because I'm fixing to buy a kayak. Fitting to buy a kayak.
Yeah. So. Cool. I don't know. I think we got about covered everything we wanted to cover.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, that was a fun podcast.
Sure.
Any last words?
No, just get out there. Otherwise, you won't kill anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I can say. And you know, look at you know, like we talked about, the situation you're going into and what you need for that. You know. Do your research. Don't have anybody else do it for you. A lot of other people will do it for you. You just gotta look it up, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, they'll do. Yeah, yeah. Other people will do it for you, but they have their own agenda, and that's the hard part.
Yeah.
You know? Like even talking to you, I talk to you about a lot of gear. We work together, and I talk to you about a lot of gear, but the needs aren't the same.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, I do. Like, yeah, you know, I do a lot of stuff solo.
Yeah.
You know, most of my stuff's solo, and that's what, you know, it's just me going in there, you know, so I gotta be kind of up to date on what's going on.
Right. So. Yeah, so the needs are different, and the desires are different, and what we're hunting is different, you know, and so all of that happens. You know, like I said, you can't have, unless you're, you know, professional hunter, you're not going to have...
Free stuff.
Free stuff. For everything, right?
Yeah.
No, you're not going to have something for everything.
No.
You know, you're not going to have all the gear for every hunt that you possibly want to go on.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah, I think people get jaded a lot by the quote unquote celebrity hunters, you know, and because they get all this stuff thrown at them, and then you know, well, he has 150. Quart Yeti, I need to get that. You know what? No,
you just
grab that Coleman and throw some dry ice, and you're just fine. You know.
That's something that we found because Dedon had a Yeti, and we showed up to elk camp first time that we all hunted together. Showed up to elk camp, and he had his Yeti, and I think I had an Igloo or a Coleman or something like that.
Yeah, Igloo or Coleman,
and I had. Pre-cooled it like you're supposed to do, and then we put a bunch of ice in it, and man, it lasted just as long as that Yeti.
Well, so,
but we weren't in and out of it.
Yeah, there's the key, you know. So like, if you're gonna get two coolers, so a Yeti's gonna hold better. There's no doubt. But all things being equal, if your Coleman or Igloo is just sitting there and you're not getting into it all the time, it's gonna hold.
Yep.
If you're opening that Yeti and closing the Yeti and opening that Yeti and closing it, that ice is going to melt. I don't care. And that's exactly what we found. We kept the sodas in his cooler, in the Yeti, and the ice melted. We kept the meat in the other cooler, and that ice didn't melt because we were getting into it once a day. And so it held longer. Now, if you just put them both side by side, put ice in them, put them in the sun, and let them sit, the Yeti is going to hold longer. But still, you're going to spend... $500 on a freaking Yeti. Well, buy that $50 freaking Igloo and go get you some freaking Vortex.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
there's your budget for the glass. You know, unless you're more concerned about sitting around camp and drinking beer, so than you are hunting, then, you know.
Maybe you want the Yeti.
Yeah, maybe you want the Yeti. I have a Yeti. I didn't buy it. It was given to me.
Yeah.
I have one of them fancy Ozarks that you can get at Walmart that are Yeti-like. Yeah. But the only reason I bought it is because it was, back then, they were $200-something-odd, and they had it marked accidentally at 100. So I bought it.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, that's something that I think a lot of people feel is, you get jaded by the hunting shows, and they've got this and that and the other, and if you can just realize, I don't need that, that you can get by with this, I think you're going to be a lot better off and budget for the stuff that you really do need.
Yeah. There's a few things that you need. You know, you need good boots. Need good glass. You need a good weapon. But good weapon is a lot easier to find. You know, you can get proficient with a
decent pair of glass.
Well, you can get proficient with a decent rifle.
Yeah.
Or with the low end bow.
Yeah.
It's maybe you have to work a little harder at it. You know, maybe you have to work a little harder at your consistency and stuff like that. But you can get good with that. You're not going to get good at looking through cheap glass.
Yeah.
You know, your eyes are going to get strained. Yeah. You know. And
you're not going to get good at hiking with blisters on your feet.
Yeah.
Shit boots will ruin a hunt.
Yeah. Thin slate versus Gore-Tex.
Well, even you know, I run Salomon boots, and they've been treating me pretty dang good for the past 2.5 years. Yeah. And yesterday we were turkey hunting, and my feet were soaking wet. So I guess they finally broke.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, well, that's on the list for this year.
Trail?
No, they're not all leather. They're a mesh, but they supposedly have a Gore-Tex in them, and I guess that Gore-Tex finally broke on them.
Yeah, so. and that happens every now and then. You know, I got a pair of snake boots that I've worn forever, and they were waterproof until my hunt in the Valle, and then at some point, they broke and they were done.
Yep.
So again, it was one of those things. Oh, guess I better get another pair. Yeah. And I did. I got another pair of those. They were Danners. I got another pair that was the same type, different camo pattern. But even then, you got to buy something that's going to fit you and work well for you. Those boots rubbed the hell out of my feet, and I ended up giving them to Rodney because they didn't fit me.
Mm-hmm.
They fit him just fine.
Yep.
And so that's another thing, you know, you just got to take that into consideration. Right. Even though it's the same company, make sure you try them on. Make sure, you know, if they're not working for you, don't continue to use them just because.
Right. Well,
you can get a good price for a used pair of boots and then go get you a pair that works for you. But
well, that's what I did with those Salomons. You know, they're going to be a good summer, you know, hiking boot, you know, when it's not raining and you know, it's not wet. But even that being said, you know, I just wore them this past January hunt. And tromping through snow, they did just fine.
Yeah.
But we got wet, and they got wet, and my feet got wet, you know?
Yeah.
So, I can still use them, you know, September, you know?
Yeah.
You know, when it's decent. And I bought... First thing in the morning,
doesn't matter if it's raining or not.
They're not a $400 boot. You know, I paid $200 for them, but I went and bought some Super Feet insoles, put them in there to make them a little bit sturdier for them. And, you know, then they work great.
So, I'm running a set of Danners right now. And they're really good boots. And the only problem that I have with them is, you know, we live in New Mexico. And my, I bought, what did I get, 400 gram?
Yeah.
And, you know, I wear wool socks. And I would suggest, and this is all personal preference, but I suggest a lighter weight.
200. That's what I like. Yeah. I like the 200.
And then wear a heavier wool sock for your insulation. Yeah. You know, that's my personal, because those ones. I mean, that January deer hunt that I wore them was great because it was cold and my feet stayed nice and toasty and I was good. But I've been on several other hunts with that where.
I've always ran 400 Danners as well, and I've always had talking about upgrading your gear and learning from experience. Yeah, you started off you know, wearing cotton socks or those big heavy wool socks. And, you know, the cotton socks, obviously, your feet get hot later in the day. And then you sit down to, you know, you sit in a blind or something, then your feet get numb. And then, you know, the wool socks, your feet move around so much, especially on these steep mountains. And then you get blisters. And so anyway, the best solution I found for myself is using a wicker sock.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, you know, your feet will be a little bit cold whenever you put that boot on straight out of the tent. But once you get moving, you know, it builds up a little bit of heat. Mm-hmm. And then that wicker sock just doesn't sweat. You know, it works really well with the Gore-Tex.
I've never had...
It's been my best log.
I've never had any problems with my wool socks. I wear wool socks year-round. I don't even own a pair of any other kind of socks. Yeah.
I think I was going with the ones that were just...
Yeah, the old school ones.
Yeah, I
run merino wool socks.
I have some thicker ones, but I typically just wear those when I'm wearing, like, I have a set of boots that's just a little loose on me, and I don't like to wear loose boots, so I wear those thicker socks with those. But I just wear my regular socks, my regular wool socks with my hunting boots, and it seems to work, you know, keep me a little cooler.
Well, and you know, nice thing is they're always coming up with new and blends and things like that, and so don't be afraid to try something. But if it's not working, I mean, those wicker socks work for Steven,
we're trying
that. You know, we shouldn't tell him, hey, you need to have wool socks, because if it's working for him, let it work. You know,
you know, you can put your wicker socks on and like get super cold. You know, and you're chomping around in snow, and you know, throw your wool socks
over the top of
and
it,
and then basically, just like you do with your jacket and stuff, dress in layers,
layer it up.
Yeah. That's one thing that I had to learn. Well, I guess everybody learns it, but you know, is not being afraid to, you know, shed layers. You know, you want to dress in layers so you can shed layers, but I mean, you get out there in the woods and it gets warm, it's better to just go ahead and stop at the bottom of a hill, drop trowel, pull them warm underwear off, put your pants back on, and go up the hill and not produce sweat. It's just much better to go ahead and do that. Yeah, it takes a little bit of time, but you know, if you need to, pull your boots off, pull that extra set of wool socks off, just leave your wickers on, throw your socks in your pack, go up the hill, and when you get to the top, change again.
Yeah,
and then especially if you're hunting something like elk or barbary or something, you don't want that sweat because they're going to wind you.
Yeah.
I mean, we're here in New Mexico, the wind swirls whenever you think you got it figured
out. Oh, exactly.
Game such over. A pain.
Never fails.
Yeah.
All right, I think we've took up enough of these gentlemen's time, so we're going to let you guys go. Thanks for joining. Come check out our website. Look for us on Instagram, Facebook,
Twitter. Like us, we're not terribly active on Twitter. I have a hard time doing that.
We have I'm not going to tweet.
You're not a tweeter?
I'm not a tweeter. I'm not a celebrity athlete.
So not a tweeter or a tweaker or anything like that?
Yeah. So.
All right. Adios, guys.
Adios.
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 Thanks for joining Not a Grande Outdoors Podcast.
Come follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. And don't forget about our website, www.notagrandeoutdoors.com.
Adios.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.